Before he could venture to the moon, Frank Borman would first have to master the flying machines he'd loved since he was a little boy. Born in 1928, the only child of Edwin and Marjorie Borman, Frank was supposed to grow up in Gary, Indiana, where his father ran a successful garage business, a point of pride in the early years of the Great Depression when so many other families were struggling. But the trick to living happily in Gary was overlooking the persistent chill and leaden dampness that often settled over the area. Though most Indianans could tolerate the weather, young Frank couldn't. Sinus problems, repeated colds, and ear infections kept him out of school so regularly that the family's doctor warned his parents that if the boy didn't get somewhere dry and warm fast, he might grow up with no hearing at all. So the family abandoned their life in Gary and moved to Tucson, Arizona. Frank promptly got well, thrived in school, and took to building and flying model airplanes, then more model airplanes, and then many more still. When he was a senior in high school, the year after the end of World War II, a war in which air power played a major role, he decided that flying real airplanes was what he wanted to do with his life. The best route to the best planes, he knew, was to get himself accepted to West Point, and from there to make his way to the Air Force. The only problem was, by the time he decided that he wanted to go to the military academy, it was technically too late for him to apply. But by a stroke of luck and more than a little finagling, he managed to get on the waiting list and was then accepted. Borman, to his own amazement, was to take his place as a shaven-headed plebe, the military academy word for freshman, in the class of 1950. As he'd suspected he would, Borman loved every single thing about West Point. He was a hard worker and relished West Point's head-cracking academics and ferocious discipline, and the deep camaraderie that came from standing on the lowest rung of an exceedingly hierarchical system. Unlike a lot of other plebes, Borman even learned to appreciate the self-control that came from tolerating the hazing at the hands of the more senior cadets, though that part was not easy. There was the business of eating in silence with his back perfectly straight and in a full brace position, or complying uncomplainingly when an upperclassman would unmake a perfectly made bed and have him remake it. Ultimately, the young cadet became so assimilated to the military life that when his 4 years at West Point were done, he graduated 8th in a class of 670 people, an accomplishment impressive enough to earn him his longed-for assignment to the Air Force. Upon graduation, he received orders to report to Nellis Air Force Base in southeastern Nevada, where he would train to fly the F-80 fighter jet, before shipping out sometime in 1951 to combat in the Korean War. Before he headed to Nellis, he wanted to make sure one very special person would come with him. He asked his longtime love, Susan, to marry him, and she agreed to become his wife. Borman had achieved precisely the trajectory he had planned for himself. It was all going so right that maybe he was too cocky or too blind to see how one foolish risk could send it all crashing down. Nevada's Nellis Air Force Base was exactly what Borman expected it to be, a passable enough place for a young military officer and his new bride to make a home, and an extraordinary place to learn combat flying. And it was clear to all the flyers on the base that their skills would be needed soon. The men at Nellis were anxious to get into combat in the Korean War, and their training was intensified so that they would be battle-ready in as short a time as possible. Borman, whose star had shone so brightly at West Point, was determined to make his mark as an aviator as well. And that led him to do a very dumb thing. One afternoon, several months after arriving at Nellis, Borman hopped into an F-80 to run some dive bombing drills, just to sharpen the skills he would need once he got into combat. It was a fine way to spend a free hour or two, except on a day when a pilot had a bad head cold.